and welcome to the TNW podcast, the show in which we discuss the latest developments in the European technology ecosystem and feature occasional interviews with some of the most interesting people in the industry. My name is Andrei Degeler. I am the head of media at TNW.
I'm Ioana Licardopoulou, reporter at TNW.
Ioana, how are you doing? How's it been?
I'm good. I'm actually having quite a busy week, but I'm really excited for my upcoming trip, to be honest.
Right. So you're just about to leave us for how long?
For a couple of weeks, 2 weeks and a half.
To the same destination as the usual co-host of this podcast, Linnea.
Yes, exactly. We discussed that it's important that at least one of us is at this destination at least twice per month.
Great. And where are you going then?
I'm going in Vietnam.
Great. So yeah. This sounds like a great time, yeah. and especially with the weather that we're having here in Amsterdam right now.
Well, it's going to be 35 degrees, and I can tell you that I'm not looking forward to that.
I know, between 35 degrees in Vietnam and plus 6 and drizzling rain in Amsterdam, I would really pick Vietnam.
I would still pick Amsterdam, but...
Really?
Yeah.
Why are you going then?
I'm going because of the landscapes and the culture, but not the temperature.
Okay, so just because there are some features of the landscape, unlike...
Yes, here. Exactly.
Understood. Perfect. Exactly. Okay, let's move on to today's episode then. I think you've got a lot of stuff to do afterwards anyway. So in today's episode, we are going to discuss the benefits of walking, progressive web apps, unhealthy food, and physical controls in cars, and a few things in between. So Ioana, please, can you start with the story that we covered this week? What jumped out at you? What did you write about?
Yes, so this story takes us to Vilnius in Lithuania, where doctors have started prescribing a walking app. This is actually part of a STEPS prescription pilot launched by sustainable activity startup Walk15 alongside a local doctor's polyclinic.
Oh, that's really interesting. Okay, yes. So what is this Walk15 then? How advanced a company is it?
Well, Walk15 is a startup. It was founded in 2019. Mm-hmm. Essentially, it provides an app where users can track their walking activity, participate in step challenges, which I find really cool, and also turn steps into exclusive discounts. For example, you reach 20,000 steps and you get 20% off to buy fruits and veggies in the Iki supermarkets, if you know them.
Is it like a network in Lithuania?
It's a network in Lithuania and the Baltics overall. Mm-hmm. Or... if I look now in the app, you get to 30,000 steps and you also get discounts to buy NordVPN.
That's like per day?
No, it's not per day, actually. No, it's...
Oh, so, okay, so you have to get to a total of 30,000 steps and then you will get a discount.
Yes, the minute that you reach 30,000 steps, regardless of your challenge, regardless of the day or anything, you have these steps in what the company calls a steps wallet. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So then you can redeem these steps and buy something, which is pretty nice.
That sounds like a pretty good idea. So, and now it partners with the polyclinic then?
And now it does partner with the polyclinic. They're working together. The clinic is called, and I'll probably pronounce it not perfectly, but it's called Seskines Polyclinic. So it's the first time that Walk15 is combining its technology with public healthcare systems. The pilot is designed to help doctors provide personalized steps prescriptions to patients as a form of medical treatment. And the process is very, very simple. First, doctors issue a steps prescription to patients with an X amount of steps for an X amount of time, depending on the individual's health conditions. Mm-hmm. To do that, they create a walking challenge using Walk15's platform, which patients can then access via the app and participate in the challenge. Interestingly, and that's a big part of it, doctors have access to the patient's activity and they can see if the goal has been reached or not. And this way, they can also evaluate the results next to overall health assessments and determine whether the prescription needs to be renewed, changed, or even, you know, stopped.
Nice. So you, being a good journalist, also got a prescription, didn't you?
I did. When I visited Walk15's office in Vilnius in January, I spoke with the founders about the startup's journey, and they even issued for me a personalized prescription. I was prescribed 6,000 steps every day for a month.
There we go.
Embarrassingly, I didn't always fit this goal, I have to admit. Some days I did very poorly, like not even 1,000 steps, but other days I reached even 11,000 steps, and I'm really proud of that. But I noticed something very important happening to me. I became more aware of how sedentary my lifestyle is, and the closer I was to reaching the goal, the more motivated I felt. Plus, on a personal level, I'm someone who's dealing with a couple of health issues, so if my doctor had actually recommended that for me, I think my motivation would have been even higher than the one I had now.
Okay. And did you also dig deeper into the benefits of walking in general to our health? How beneficial is it at all?
It's extremely beneficial. And I think that we don't really realize it because it's just walking. You never think about it. It's nothing much. But it helps with so many things. It's quite mind-blowing. For example, it can reduce the risk of multiple chronic diseases like asthma, type 2 diabetes, dementia, and even some types of cancer. It can also improve cardiovascular health. And to put this into perspective, cardiovascular diseases are the leading cause of death globally, according to the World Health Organization, right? And at the same time, these diseases alone are estimated to cost the EU 282 billion euros per year. So you get the picture. This means that prescribing walking as a form of medical treatment can not only help with disease prevention and a healthier lifestyle, but also alleviate pressure from our overburdened healthcare systems. And this is the exact vision of Walk 15 in this case, which also aims to become a virtual pharmacy for walking, as they say it.
Nice.
Yeah.
Do you still have the app?
Yes, I still use it. it was in the beginning, I thought it would be just a test for the prescription, but now I find myself just looking at it like, how much did you walk today?
Have you improved then?
I am improving. Yeah, I am improving. Some days I can't because I'm sitting, but this awareness part is still very critical.
Great. No, that's a really good thing. I mean, I probably also need to take a look at the number of steps I'm doing every day. Not a lot. All right. So I will move to the next one, which is a story that we didn't cover. And I wanted to highlight in this segment a story on Apple that has just reversed its earlier decision to block what's called progressive web apps or PWAs on iPhones in the European Union. So in case you're not familiar with what PWAs are, that's normal. They are the web apps that rely on your browser to execute them, but at the same time, they act as native apps in many ways. And for example, they can use much more of your device's capabilities than a normal web page would. So it's somewhere in the middle, basically having benefits of both web pages and actual apps on your phone. And of course, due to their nature, PWAs do not need to be distributed through the App Store. And of course, the developers do not pay Apple any commissions for in-app purchases and such.
Okay, and for those who are unfamiliar with PWAs, why are they important?
I mean, in my view, that's a totally personal opinion, PWAs are really an extremely underrated piece of technology because they are very easy to distribute and in a lot of cases, they can function just as well as native apps. I mean, some years ago, I still remember that it was widely predicted that PWAs would actually take over and become the default type of apps on smartphones and nobody's going to think too much about all those pesky app stores. I still don't fully understand why it hasn't happened. And by the way, if you are listening to this and you're a developer or have something to do with this market and you think you can offer an explanation, please do hit me up. I would love to hear this. So, but in my view, PWAs are still a pretty important piece of the app infrastructure on the phones. And it's really interesting to see how they develop.
So why would Apple consider reversing the ban?
Okay, so the story is Apple decided to effectively ban PWAs on iPhones in the EU in the beta version of its iOS 17.4, which was released just recently, I think, last week. Effectively, by saying effectively ban, I mean that what actually happened is PWAs became just shortcuts to web pages rather than apps of their own. So they weren't removed from the phones, but they also did not function as actual web apps at all. So the company cited security concerns as the main reason, which often happens with Apple, and they referred to the Digital Markets Act, or the DMA, to justify the decision. The European Commission, however, didn't buy any of it, and they very quickly said that the decision to ban PWAs led to a wave of complaints that the Commission received both from businesses and from individuals. And then the Commission also added that as far as the DMA compliance goes, banning PWAs was, I quote, neither required nor justified, end of quote. So at the end of the day, Apple decided to reverse the ban, and PWAs will be available again in the upcoming release of 17.4 later this month. I mean, I just think that Apple has its hands very full in the EU with the huge 1.8 billion euro fine that it's facing, just the recent news. So this fight was most certainly not worth picking for them.
Yes, this is exactly what I wanted to mention, that it's not really a good week for Apple when it comes to the EU and the Commission, is it?
No, it doesn't seem to be. And there was a very big surprise, big fine, and this is something that could be a topic of a totally different, totally separate episode of the podcast. But also we need to understand that same as anything that has to do with the European Commission and regulation, it's going to take years and years and years until it actually plays out.
Yes, that's definitely true.
Now, okay, let's talk about what we have learned this week. Ioana, what did you pick this time?
I picked something health related.
Oh, there we go.
To, you know, since we spoke about healthier lifestyles earlier, I came across quite an upsetting study, mm-hmm. to be honest. There's been a new research that has found that ultra-processed foods are linked to over 32 health conditions. They're all quite scary. The most common are increased risk of death related to cardiovascular diseases, increased risk of type 2 diabetes, and again, an increase of anxiety and mental disorders. Honestly, I think we're all more or less aware of the poor quality of ultra-processed foods. We know that they undergo extreme industrial and chemical processes, and they're stripped from any nutritional value. Yet we still consume them. Personally, I ate a burger from a fast food restaurant last Friday, very famous one, right? I don't know if you have a similar experience lately, but you still know about it, but you still do it. And experts link our consumption to two main reasons, price and convenience, which makes a lot of sense. But I was thinking, what if there was an app or something similar that could show you exactly what it means for your body and for your health when you consume chicken nuggets or ready-to-eat meals or instant noodles? What do you think? Would it help?
I'm really not sure, because I think the problem with this is that people who consume this type of foods most often, I don't think they would care all that much, like, because for them, price and convenience are too much of a factor. That's the issue here. So I think you would need to have something bigger than an app in order to get to this goal. By the way, do we have even a definition of what an ultra-processed food is?
Yes, ultra-processed foods are made mostly from substances extracted from foods, such as fats, added sugars, and hydrogenated fats. They may also contain additives like artificial colors and flavors or stabilizers very often. Examples are mostly known to everyone. They are frozen meals, soft drinks, hot dogs, fast foods, packaged cookies, salty snacks, stuff like that.
All the stuff that we've got in our office as snacks.
Exactly.
Okay, so we need to, I think we need to start a revolution. Yeah, a campaign indeed to get more healthy snacks and less processed foods. But no, I mean, it is a pretty important thing to talk about and to care about. So if you are listening to this and you know a good solution to the consumption of a lot of processed and ultra processed foods, do let us know. We will be very happy to feature that on the podcast. Okay, I'm going to talk about in my part of the this week we learned segment about something a bit more uplifting, if you will, in a way. So this week I learned that if you would like to buy a new car in the EU, it could be a good idea actually to wait until 2026.
Why?
At least in my view. So that's because there is a chance that we will see a return of physical controls to the car's dashboards around that time. Well, I'm at least to a certain extent. So as I read this week in a piece by Ars Technica, this is thanks to the European New Car Assessment Program, which is also known as Euro NCAP, which performs crash tests and gives out safety ratings to cars that are sold in the European Union. So pretty often when you buy a car, when you Google a car, you see the Euro NCAP rating. So that's the organization that gives them out. So, and the Euro NCAP has recently called on auto manufacturers to come to their senses in regards to the use of touchscreens in their vehicles.
Perfect.
Exactly. To quote Euro NCAP's Director of Strategic Development, Matthew Avery, so he said the following: new Euro NCAP tests due in 2026 will encourage manufacturers to use separate physical controls for basic functions in an intuitive manner, limiting eyes off-road time and therefore promoting safer driving, the quote ends. Namely, the organization is talking about like really, really basic functions like turn signals, hazard lights, windshield wipers, the horn, and also any additional SOS features. So they all will need to be physical in order for the car to get a good Euro NCAP rating.
Back to the basics then.
Yes, of course, it's just those very basic functions. It's not stuff like your air conditioner or something, which I also actually prefer to have as
a knobs and buttons. I prefer everything as a button, yeah.
And interestingly, so one of the most obvious offenders that would have to change something here is Tesla, which recently abandoned physical stalks behind the wheel and moved turn indicator functions to buttons on the steering wheel. I have not seen it yet. I only read about it, but it does not strike me as a great idea, to be entirely honest. I mean, I do personally prefer to have the knobs and buttons, so I really do hope that Euro NCAP would be able to reverse the touchscreen trend here. It's just nice to have a big screen in the car, I get it, but it doesn't mean everything has to be controlled from there.
No, I think it really reduces the in-car experience.
No, yeah, exactly. And you drove a Nissan Micra back home, right?
I did, but...
what year was it from?
2008.
Okay, so that's all knobs and buttons.
Definitely, it's still driving. It has a lot of buttons, but I've driven multiple cars, and I have to say that I still prefer those that you have to perform the functions than the car doing them for you.
Yeah, car automation is another thing, but yeah, both. We should probably just think about common sense in both touchscreens and car automation. Now, on this uplifting note, waiting for 2026 to buy a new car, this is also all we have time this time for the episode of the TNW podcast. Thank you so much for listening. If you do like our show, please help us spread the word. Tell a friend or colleague about the show and follow our updates on social media. Just search for The Next Web and you will find us almost everywhere. Our music and sound engineering is done by SoundPulse. Feel free to email us at any time with any questions, suggestions, and opinions. We're always at podcast@thenextweb.com. I am Andrei Degler.
I'm Ioana Likardopoulou.
Have a great week, and we're going to talk to you next Wednesday. Bye-bye.